Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. Have you ever gone to a conference or a party or maybe just for a walk in a park and you meet someone and all of a sudden conversation begins and you are learning and the other person is learning and you're enjoying each other's company and before you know it you feel like you've made a lifelong friend? And then you do the extraordinary, you actually stay in touch. Well, that's my guest today. Her name is Chris Ann Gordon, M.D. Chris Ann is spelled C-H-R-I-S-A-N-N-E, one word, Chris Ann Gordon, M.D. Chris Ann went to Duquesne in Pittsburgh and then graduated from the Ohio State University in medicine some time ago, 1977. She has since 1988 been director of rehab services at the Memorial Hospital in Ohio. And she currently, and what really developed into some very interesting conversation for me, she's currently working in affiliation with a Veterans Administration clinic in Columbus, where even though she is a civilian, and it'd be interesting to learn more about that, she's performing evaluations on Iraq and Afghanistan veterans suspected with traumatic brain injury. Her primary goal is working on educational, vocational, and employment opportunities for the 50,000 vets who are in difficult situations as a result of these conflicts and who live in Ohio. She's a great advocate of exercise, which I only found out reading this because we didn't talk about exercise. But I did send her an email telling her I've been exercising for 2 weeks now, mildly, moderately, not pushing it, with my wife Ginger. And everything your doctor's been telling you about exercise is true. It really is life-changing without overdoing it. Chris Ann Gordon, are you there?
I am, and I've been smiling with your introduction there, Dr. Bregan, one of my favorite new best friends who I felt like I've known for a lifetime. So
so how do I go about convincing you to call me Peter on the air? I know you come from a respectful conservative tradition.
So, I will definitely try to do that. But see, you know, you came with a lot of kudos when I first met you. I was afraid to even approach you before your lecture, and luckily you just came and approached me, and that was great. But I just wanted to thank you on behalf of all of my heroes coming back for the work they're doing with them and the overuse of drugs in the military. So I just wanted to thank you so much from them, okay?
Well, this is very mutual because Bart Billings, who was running the conference that both of us presented on in Los Angeles, runs the oldest military stress conference. Bart made Chris Ann sound so incredible that I was afraid to meet her. And now I found out that he made her afraid to meet me.
Yes. He does a good job then. He does a very good job.
One of the interests we had in common that is head injury.
Right.
And you have a very personal interest in that, Chris Ann.
Yes, I do, from having my own in 1999. And so it was a very interesting experience that I knew was going to serve me well at some time, at least I hoped it did. And luckily, with dealing with our heroes coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with TBI, at least I found a common ground with them. And I don't think that a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, is something you can really understand from the textbooks. It was certainly a whole lot different, Peter, living it than reading about it, I'll tell you.
Now, you were already working in rehab.
Correct.
You were for at least 10 years then at the time of the injury.
Correct, I was.
Did it change the trajectory of your career to be more interested specifically in head injury?
Yes, it did. And it also changed my career in the fact that it made me question the status quo a lot more, because what I had read about traumatic brain injury and how easy it was to recover was not at all the case. And, you know, nobody wants to recover more than I do. I think kind of the athlete mentality that you get up and you go, and yet you have to let the brain take its own course. And so it made me more interested in traumatic brain injury and more interested in challenging the system a bit to say, you know, what we've written down here is really not at all what's going on in your recovery if you have what I was diagnosed as, that post-concussive syndrome, you know.
Describe your fall and the consequences, because I really want people to know you were badly hurt.
Well, you know, and it was a very simple thing, literally putting up Christmas decorations, and it was a fall from just a couple steps, but being kind of the clumsy person I was, the crown of my head hit right into the concrete. So it was a direct blow to the top of my head, and as I mentioned to you when I met you there, I knew at that moment I was going to be unconscious. I mean, it was an instantaneous recognition that I'd never had my head bang like that before. And, you know, as a clinician, as a physician, the last thing I remember saying is, oh, God, don't let me wake up a quadriplegic. You know, let me be able to move all my limbs when I wake up is basically the prayer I was saying. And about 25 minutes later, when I did wake up, I was able to move everything, but I couldn't think. So, you know, be careful what you pray for, you know what I mean?
So then what happened? So you were...
Well, you know, it was, took me a couple hours literally to get myself oriented to kind of stand up, because as you know, with so many of the brain injuries and with our veterans coming back, there's a great loss of balance. And I had a very difficult time with my vision. I really couldn't focus on anything. So, you know, it took me a while to kind of make my way back up the stairs, and luckily a friend of mine was due to come over anyhow, and when he arrived, I realized at that point in time that I couldn't speak. I couldn't tell him what happened, but I could kind of rudimentally write it down. So I just put down hit head ER. Get me to the ER.
Wow. So then give us a little more sense. You go to the ER. Were you hospitalized for a while?
No, and that's the very interesting thing. You know, luckily I was seen by a colleague of mine who knows. And as you know, Peter, and your audience doesn't know, I'm actually slowing down my speech a lot to talk with you. Because usually if I wanted to talk about regular speed, it would be like this. Okay. And I know from New York you can handle it, but I'm not sure all of the listeners can at this hour of the day. So I'm trying to calm down. Well, when they realized I couldn't speak, you know, and I also had no feeling on the right side of my body, so you're already saying, well, it's got to be somewhere in the left temporal lobe. But I could remember that it was somewhere, you know, at the point where the lesion was, I thought, but I couldn't remember everything about it. And so they do the obligatory CAT scan, which is totally normal, and you know, they send you home with your caregiver, who at that time was my boyfriend, and said, you know, wake her up every couple hours and ask her these questions. And you know, I thought to myself, this is very interesting, because I know what I'm supposed to look for, but if I go unconscious again, do I trust this little lawyer who is afraid of everything medicine to get me back to the hospital? So it's very interesting, and what I must say, and you know, I keep coming back to, like you said, the nearly 15,000 heroes we have in Ohio with traumatic brain injury from these wars, and nearly 400,000 across the country. I can't even imagine, Peter, what that would be like to have that same feeling, like they get from a blast injury, be told to pick up their comrade, their buddy's body parts, and put it in body bags and get back in a different Humvee and continue with the war. You know, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine that, because I knew, you know, the most interesting thing and the most interesting way that I describe how I felt for the first 3 weeks are, in the old days, they used to have those deep diving suits, you know, with the big headgear, and sure, that's what I felt like. I felt like I had one of those on my head, because my head felt just so large and so out of proportion with the rest of my body, and I couldn't focus on anything for several weeks, so it was as if I was underwater, you know, looking at the world through, you know, a totally different dimension. And that's the part that they don't tell you in the books, you know. they don't let you know that's what your patient's feeling on the inside. So I tried to keep a journal, and the worst thing that I did is I actually, a couple years after this, about in 2001, I went back and rewrote the journal because parts of it didn't make sense, and parts of it were written as if, like, a 4 or 5 year old were writing it, and I should have actually left it in its premier form because it would have meant a lot more, I think, to my patients.
Now, can you, are you comfortable talking about what you feel are still some of the residual symptoms? Because one of the things that I think is so important for people to know about is this very positive attitude that you have toward the effects of head injury in terms of opening up new vistas,
right,
and in terms of finding new powers and new spiritual strength.
Right.
But Do you feel you've completely and by the way, if at any point you just think something's a little off bounds, you please, God, tell me.
I will, but I really don't ever see that happening with talking to you. So no worries, no worries.
So talk a little about what about the course of recovery and what you're left with, and then we'll go on and talk about what you've learned about how to live life this way.
Right. You know, I can honestly say, as, you know, my friends who knew me and my family can say, I'm definitely not the same person a year after that I was before the brain injury. And I say a year after because for that whole year of kind of recuperation, there were a whole lot of things that I didn't like about the way that I was feeling or acting. And when we talk about that kind of hypervigilance, that nervousness, that wondering what's going on around you, that definitely happens with a nerve that's trying to recuperate. And so I think that brought about, I mean, I had somewhat of an Irish temper beforehand, and I had a really incredibly short fuse during like the first 6 months, and it could be for even little things, but what we considered little things, like going into a grocery store, I could not do it. There was just too much noise, too many lights, too many things on the shelf, too much commotion, and you lose your ability to filter. You lose your ability to focus. So I do remember that for 6 months, I went to what we call the United Dairy Farmers. It's like a BP gas station or one of the gas station marts where you could get bread, milk, you know, coffee and eggs and macaroni and cheese in the box. And that's what I lived on for like 6 months because I could not go into a restaurant or one of the giant supermarkets or even my smaller supermarket. And that fact is one of the most telling facts from a traumatic brain injury because up until that point in time, we were always taught that's a sign of post-traumatic stress. You know, that's a PTSD symptom. You can't, you know, go in with the crowd. But in reality, it is a hallmark of a brain injury where you cannot filter out what is important to you. Everything is, you know, coming in from your eyes, your ears, you know, your senses. And it took me literally about a year to be able to filter that out. Now, on the flip side, when I did achieve what General Lori Sutton in the Army called the new normal after a brain injury, I found out that I was very much different from that. I have a much longer fuse than I ever had. You know, I became unable to really understand the complex math and science that I knew so well and the only thing that I knew the first 40 years of my life, and I suddenly began writing music and the lyrics and screenplays, and I found out that I actually like this. This is good. But if I hadn't been able to adjust and do something else with my brain, it would have been very difficult. And literally, there were about 3 or 4 months there. I wasn't sure I was going to ever be able to do anything with the brain. It was just so interesting to me. Again, just for your listeners and that who have been diagnosed as this great term that we give, the post-concussive syndrome. You know, somebody who's a little bit more hyper than the normal person and all they want to do is sue people because you can't really find the reason why they're still not able to see well or they have headaches. In reality, and you and I talked about this, it just seems to be every so often a person has that particular reaction to a brain injury. It's kind of a charging up of your adrenaline system within your brain. And it isn't something that I wanted to happen. There was nobody to sue. I was not going to be able to get any income. And as a single parent, if I don't work, I don't eat, that kind of thing. So none of that was involved with the symptoms I was having. And I think that became one of the reasons why I'm a champion for the people who are said, you know, this is in your mind. It's definitely, as you and I said, it's in your brain. It's not in your mind.
You also told me that you realized after the injury that you'd had a nearly photographic memory because you didn't have it anymore.
Yeah, that was really, I will tell you, that was the low point. That was a very low point. Again, I don't think you know what you have, but I was able, you know, throughout medical school, and I mean, if I read a journal and you asked me about it a couple months later, I could quote you, and in my mind's eye, I would see, you know, the line, the paragraph, the page, everything about it. I just thought everybody's brain did that. And then I found out that for at least 6 months after this, I couldn't remember a sentence. You know, I mean, something very simple, not even a complex math or science problem. So, yeah, that was a very low point for me. And I do remember at that time, and again, just kind of share with the audience my little Irish Catholic upbringing. I remember having my talk with God and saying, you're going to have to do something about this because I'm not going on this way. You know, you've got to help me find something else I can do because obviously I can't do this. And that's when I began using the right side of my brain, the more creative side of my brain. And actually, it's a place that's brought me a lot more peace than I had before. And I will say it also brings me a certain amount of audacity. You know, like the old me would have never gone to a combat stress conference and said, you know, we really need to get the military and the VA to change the way they're doing things and to start working with the civilian world. I would have never done that. Now I seem to have this, you know, no, we can do this. You know, we can change things. A lot more hopeful, I guess. And I don't know my place as well as I did then. Maybe that's it.
I love that. You don't know your place as well as you did then. So presumably you wouldn't have even come up and introduced yourself to me before your head injury.
No, I wouldn't. Well, I would have never been at that conference, Peter. I truly would have never been at that conference because anything that said stress on it, you know, I'm a person who gives people stress. I don't particularly feel it myself, you know, up until that point in time. So it was definitely, you know, a life-changing event. And I think that's why I can in some way relate to my heroes who have all had a life-changing event, as if war is not a big enough event. War plus a head injury is a huge event. And it is something that does really change you forever. I've never gained back my photographic memory, nor my understanding of many of the principles that I knew back then. But, you know, I also am learning to meet people like you and discovering that there's an entire world out there that is a lot more spiritual and loving and creative than I had any idea.
Now, Chrisanne, you are so full of life and so full of love, and like you have the capacity to make me feel so appreciated, and I'm sure you give that to many, many, many people. You're just brimming over with spirituality. Is that a real change? Is that an unrecognizable change or a slight change? What is that?
I think that's a very recognizable change. You know, I would say truly, and I think you, because of your study of empathy and your empathic center, would understand that before this, I would say that I was a very sympathetic healthcare giver. I mean, I listened to the people, I sympathized with them, but there's a huge difference between sympathy and empathy. And now I feel, and I truly do feel a lot more what they're going through. And interestingly enough, I don't always need them to tell me either. You know, there's a lot more, I don't know whether it's a sixth sense that was developed, but I really do believe it was. I think that's part of the survival from a traumatic brain injury. If you lose, like, I really lost my eyesight, my ability to focus for quite some time. And if you lose that sense, you're going to have to gain another one in order to survive. And so I think that the sixth sense that I gained, I've also noted in many of my patients with traumatic brain injury, you know, who say, well, you know, that day that he got, for instance, the traumatic brain injury, then, like, the next week, you know, we were going out on parole, and I just knew something was going to happen, so I braced myself. And I will tell you, Peter, I hear that story time and time again. I just knew something was going to happen, that sixth sense, that hyper-survival. And I think these are some things that we need to take a look at in the future, you know. Is there a way to pick that up on a functional MRI or on an EEG, or what exactly, you know, is happening? My brain is not functioning at all like it did before. And getting used to the new normal was interesting, but now that I have, I've decided to run with it, you know.
You've told me these amazing stories, and of course we heard an amazing story when we had lunch together with a soldier who was a colonel, I believe.
Yes.
Who had been through some sort of, it's much too complicated, but he had a serious head injury, brain
right.
injury, and how he changed.
Right.
And we were all just sitting there talking about this stuff over lunch and marveling. But you were telling stories, and I'd like you to share, as much as you're comfortable, some of the experiences okay. you've had with the soldiers who have come in for evaluation and your sixth sense at
work
with them.
Oh, yes. You know, I will tell you, and it really is something that I'm still learning, okay? But, you know, for instance, one of the soldiers I think I told you about, the man came in, and I'm there like, okay, whose weight is he carrying with him? I mean, this young gentleman just looked as down as any human could, but it's a difference than just looking down depressed. I mean, literally, Peter, his shoulders were slumped. He was about a 6'2" individual who had crumpled himself into about a 5'11" stature, you know, and just looking down the ground. So depressed, and I just felt the sense that there was something really major that had happened to him, and I really felt that he was carrying the weight of one of his buddies from the war for whatever reason. I mean, this was still new to me working with them. And so we went through a series of things that I had to talk to him about for the VA evaluation, and I kept coming back to, well, do you know any Irishmen? Because I swear, you know, I've got this Irish. No, he didn't, and he wasn't Irish and all this stuff. Until it came around to the time to evaluate him. And when I went to do my physical examination, and I was looking at his wrist because he had some wrist complaints, I noticed on his wrist bracelet there was the name of a gentleman who was quite Irish, a Patrick, and I won't mention his last name, but a Patrick and a last name that was very Irish. And I grabbed that wrist bracelet, and I looked at him, and I said, this is the person who came in with you today. This is the Irishman I've been sensing. And that poor young man he suddenly stood up all 6'2" and hugged me and just was sobbing and tells the story of how he was supposed to go into this house, but his shoelace broke. And so he bends down to pick up his shoelace, and his buddy ran in ahead of him and stepped on an IED and was blown up. That's what these guys are dealing with, that guilt. And again, I think because of the head injury, that sixth sense, I sensed that there was something more going on with this young man than just the list of 17 pages worth of yes, no questions I was supposed to ask him. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, my God, I know what you mean. These stories, you know, if I had heard them years ago, I would have thought, oh, my God, what do I do with this? But, you know, more and more, and I think my wife has had some influence on me in this regard, Ginger, as in all things spiritual. I do think there's a lot more going on than we think.
Right.
What about the role of God? You mentioned earlier that you asked God for something else to do.
Yes.
And how much of a part, how much more did you become attuned to the idea of something beyond us?
Well, you know, I've always had that idea of something beyond us, but I will tell you that up until my head injury, I was always playing chess. Oh, you think I'm going to do this, I'm going to do, you know, something would come in my path and I go, oh, that's an obstacle, I'll just walk on over. I really took things into my own hands. And I did pretty well with that. You know what I mean? My career went pretty well. I had a pretty good life. with the head injury, I realized I am not in control. My brain is not functioning. It is not going to get me through here. I need something else to get me through, some kind of spirituality, some direction. And I really remember my favorite gospel stories, and I don't remember a whole lot of them, but the one I remember about the bird never worries about what he puts on or what he eats, you know, God takes care of him. And so I literally kind of now let my life direct me. You know, I kind of follow the path that it's taken. For instance, again, the pre-TBI me would have never gotten on this radio show and talked to you. The post-TBI said, you know, this man has helped a lot of people. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, and will continue to do so through your work. And I said, you know, I'm going to let him take me on this path and see if there's somebody out there that hopefully we can assist in some way, or they can assist us to assist our patients. So yeah, there's big difference. I love the line from Rent. I love musicals. I love musicals now because I became musical after my TBI. And I know that I saw the musical Rent about 4 times. And I love the line in it. And I say this to my heroes coming back all the time. When they stand up and they're singing that Les Bohème, and it goes, the opposite of war isn't peace, it's creation. And I thought, wow. And when I was coming back from my head injury, I thought about, and I said, you know, we've got to create something different. You've got to create a different brain. You've got to pull into that right, peaceful brain, which has been called the place where God lives. That's where your spirituality is. And draw on that strength for whatever your belief is. Whatever your belief system is, if you can tap into another source of strength, you're going to be much better off. That's my belief.
Oh, my gosh. It's like take a deep breath. We're going to be going to break in a short time. Okay. My guest, my marvelous, marvelous guest is Chrisann Gordon, MD. She's in Columbus, Ohio. Do you have a website? I know you do. Give contact information for folks before we go to break.
Okay. The best one is just all in small case letters, drgordon@resurrectinglives.org.
Dr. Gordon at resurrectinglives.org.
Correct.
I love that, resurrectinglives.org.
Well, we can talk about that after break.
Chrisann,
yes.
This is inspiring. I want to, when we come back from break, to talk about things that inspire you, things that you care about. Maybe we can recreate to some degree our conversation that we had together. We covered so much ground. You know, I'm thinking more and more that this concept I have, that there's a chronic head injury that I'm trying to conceptualize. I'm writing, it's in my new book that's just coming out,
okay,
called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal.
Ooh.
There's a chronic head injury, I call it CBI, chronic brain injury, that falls short of what we call dementia and falls into a place that none of us have really looked carefully enough at, that has a common manifestations no matter how the injury takes place.
Mm.
So much of what you're saying, I've heard from people injured by shock treatment, injured by drugs. I think it's like a common end point for injury. And
okay,
maybe we can talk some about that when we come back. You don't at all have to agree with it. And then the other concept I've been working on that I think fits in here somehow is the medication spellbinding, that we get spellbound by injury and at first may not recognize it fully. But I wonder about that, because my sense from you is that you would be an exception to that. So that's another thought I had. And let's go to break, and I hope my listeners are enjoying this as much as I am.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
And this is Dr. Peter Breggin again, and my marvelous guest and my friend Chrisanne Gordon, MD, Ohio State University, a medical college grad, rehabilitation expert, works with the VA on evaluating returning soldiers with traumatic head injury. Also the author of a book with David Gleason called Exercise Wise, A Guide to Age-Friendly Physical Activity. I think a book like that, I think your book could save lives. I know that maybe we can talk about that for a minute, because I'm just so impressed with how much 2 weeks of moderate exercise, all in a pool for me, both swimming lengths and exercising in warm water, just how much it's just helped me feel a lot better at age 76. And I'm sure you've heard that a lot, Dr. Gordon.
Yes, and you amaze me with the things about my life you're pulling out of your hat there. I'm like, where did he find that out? I don't know. You are really amazing to me. Anyhow, that book I wrote because of my patients. Everything that I pretty much do is patient-oriented. I'm a very patient-oriented person. And what I noted was that people quit exercising for whatever reasons. They get too busy, they have kids, they get an injury, whatever, but they stop. The moment they get injured or thing becomes too hard, they stop. So we pretty much have people in the 20s, although now we've got 19% of our 20-year-olds not exercising at all and 17% of them obese. But that being said, we need to keep moving. And what the book does is kind of tells you what to do in the age group that you're in. Now, everybody will have different genetics, and we know that the genetics have a great deal to do with it. But what you were talking about, swimming, is perfect. Why? Because it's good cardiovascular, it's good floating, it doesn't harm your joints. You know, what you have to do, as with everything, is treat the patient. You know, here you are. First of all, I've got to say, you may be 76, but for many of your listeners that have seen you, they'd be hard-pressed to think you were over 46. I will tell you, that's for sure. And so I believe that what you chose to do is perfect, and what it does is it keeps your brain healthy. You're moving everything. So all of those joints have to report to the brain where they are in space and time. You get the cardiovascular boost, you get the strength in your muscles, and most importantly, you get those all-important internal endorphins, our own natural highs, that distribute through our brain and make us feel better. And exercise is actually the number one prescription item I give my patients. I don't prescribe pain medications in my practice. You know, I prescribe exercise. I prescribe modalities, heat or cold or stretching or whatever, but I'm not a proponent of pain medication, as you know.
Well, no, I'm not sure I fully grasped that, actually, because I know we have a little bit of difference on meds. So you don't prescribe pain meds in your practice. How did you come to that place?
You know, I came to that place because there is such an over-prescription of particularly narcotics in our country, and whereas post-surgical, we may need some medication to get us through the first few days, by and large, after that, the body responds a whole lot better if the body takes care of the pain itself. And that is, you know, we don't prescribe pain medications for our dogs and cats who have surgery. Okay, they may get a little bit something, but their body internally knows how much they can do before they would re-injure themselves. And that, as I explain to my patients, is a very important, you know, receptor factor that we can't let go with narcotics, let alone the brain dullness that comes from using those. And the high-powered narcotics that we have now are actually, as you know, as we talked about at the conference, you know, can be 10 times more addictive than heroin. So I don't do the pain medication. I do aspirin. I do Advil or Aleve or any of the non-steroidals for a short period of time. But by and large, I tell my patients, if you come to me, we will work our way out of this through holistic means. Exercise, acupuncture, massage, Pilates, yoga, all of that. So that's kind of the way I go. And that I do that myself as well. I mean, I don't like medications.
You know, Christiane, it's amazing that there's so many of us in different arenas coming to these same conclusions.
Absolutely. And,
The brain doesn't like psychoactive substances.
No.
I mean, you personally, me or you, may like to get a little high or to get a little dulled and think that that's an improvement. I certainly have been there, not getting high, I mean, on illegal drugs, but, you know, just feeling that relief of a medication. But the brain isn't celebrating. The brain's fighting it every inch of the way.
Yeah.
And I think that what I've been concluding is that the brain reacts to the pain meds just the way it does to the psychiatric meds, which is that it compensates for the pain meds, and you end up with more pain because
absolutely,
the drug's
and
trying
you
to stop the
it.
Pain, so your brain's fighting that you have more pain.
Exactly, and you keep chasing it until you get the scenarios like we see in Hollywood on almost a monthly basis now. You know, someone's dead in bed. Really?
Yes.
Because they took so much pain medication that it suppresses their breathing before it actually suppresses their pain. And at the Combat Stress Conference, we had a talk about that, too, just the sudden death in our young heroes on multiple medications, including pain medication. Is it respiratory depression? Is it cardiac arrest from the psychotropic drugs? What is it? Whatever it is, it's the body saying, we don't want it. We don't want it.
Yeah, these deaths are occurring on multiple meds, usually involving SSRIs and antipsychotic drugs like Abilify and pain meds, all risks to the cardiovascular system in very healthy young men and women coming back from the war.
Right.
Christiane, you have such a positive attitude toward life. Certainly for the first big chunk of my life, I was a pretty unhappy human being, and a lot of my life improved with my God finally having mercy and putting me together with Ginger, and also with learning more and more to go with my heart, to live in a place where I'm on the water, to carry God in my heart when before I was an agnostic and so on. So I've learned a lot of ways to make my life a happier, more consistently happy life. How do you do since the injury? Are you consistently this really energetic and happy person? You still have ups and downs? What is it like for you?
You know, I've been really blessed. I've had, I tend to be a little bit on the hypomanic scale, which is, you know, somebody who's up most of the time, and I certainly was before the injury. The only time in my life that I can really remember being down at all was for about the first 4 or 5 months as I was trying to deal with it and recuperate. But I will say that I do exercise, two forms of exercise every day. And one is at least for 20 minutes and the other is for 10 to 20 minutes. Or I will do a 1 hour Zumba dance, Latin dance, music, something of that nature. But I do, to practice what I preach, I exercise every day. And I think that that has its own way of keeping you, you know, naturally high. I really do. Even runners, you know, you look at these long-distance runners, Peter, and they look so, you know, they look so haggard. I mean, some of them, we have a running group here who just did a run in honor of my nonprofit for our Heroes Coming Back. That's where the Resurrecting Lives Foundation, that's where that comes into being. And they did it, and I went in this group, like, you've seen me, I mean, Peter sees me, I'm like 5'3", weigh about 120 pounds, and in this runner's group, I look obese. You know what I mean? I walk in, and these people are all six, and they run, and they looked so haggard. It was 86 degrees, and they were running. And yet they're very, very happy and balanced. Again, you keep the endorphins going. You do what our ancestors did, which is you keep moving. You know, you had to move or you died. You know what I mean? If you didn't go get food, if you didn't grow food, if you didn't make food, you wouldn't live. And I think that we've taken a lot of that out of our basic human nature, which is to keep moving and keep active in whichever way,
you know,
possible. Yes.
John Adams, the great founder of our country, who lived into his 80s, I believe,
yes,
which was certainly a lot for those days. John, but I have to check the age, but I don't use that in a quiz. But John Adams said, he said, "Move or die."
Yes.
And makes a lot of sense. We're meant to move around, and I'm going to try to just keep moving from now on and to do it on a regular basis.
That is wonderful. Like I said, the pool is wonderful because it supports your body. It supports the joints. And so people who have back pain or that, you know, truly that's a good thing for them to do is to be in the pool. So that's a great, great idea.
Let's move back on to the spirituality issue. I just find it extremely interesting, maybe because it's so hard for me. I come from such a sort of a Judaic, logical, hardcore thinker, basic scientific mentality, logical mentality. I was reading Spinoza's axioms when I was 16 years old in high school, kind of way of thinking.
Oh, wow.
So this is
in
my 30s, I first asked somebody if they had some sort of spiritual quality in their lives. They looked at me like, of course, dummy, you didn't know that. So I'm a latecomer, and I'd just like to open up some of that you're thinking about this, because I know you feel like people with head injury really become more open.
Yes.
More open. And you started to talk about it earlier, and could you go on with that conversation?
Surely I will. And by the way, I just looked it up on the internet. John Abbott was 91.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Correct.
Well, you're multitasking. You have recovered. If you're multitasking.
Exactly.
I'd be afraid I'd lose you, I'd lose the mic, I'd lose everything if I Googled in the middle of a show. I'd be running back into the back office saying, Ginger, rescue me. I tried to Google in the middle of the show. Lost my connection to PRN.
For everybody out there, remember, John Adams was 91. Yes.
91.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
You know, again, I think of the human being as being a survival machine. And that's what I tell my heroes to. You know, everything that our body does, it's really trying to tell us how we best survive. So in a situation where part of your brain is knocked out, you need another part of it to step up to the plate to keep you out of trouble. And I think that's exactly what happens when we get a brain injury. And let's think about what happens to our heroes on the battlefield or our NFL players on the football field. One of the first things that happens with a brain injury is you get hyperacusis. You hear too much. You hear noises much louder than you did before. Well, if you're not reacting as well, because we know that our memory is down and our reaction times are down, it helps to have that hyper sense of hearing to keep you safe. The same thing is true about our vision. I mean, we definitely usually get into problems with what we call photophobia or the difficulty with light. We want to squint. But again, your eye is keeping itself dilated to make sure that everything out of the horizon there, as best as you can, to kind of try and keep you safe. So that's how I look at a head injury, and that's where I think that development of the sixth sense comes in. When your other senses, you know, we know of people who can't see, but they hear wonderful, you know what I mean, and vice versa. I think that the sixth sense, the ability to read people and situations by the energy that you pick up around them, is very important, and I do think that that's a skill that many of my heroes that I've talked to have been granted either as a result of their being in a war, as a result of their head injury, whatever, but it is that hyper awareness of your environment that will keep you safe and keep others safe. Does that make sense?
Oh my God, it's so much good stuff to think about. Reminds me of something a dear friend of mine who's gone now, psychologist Kevin McCready, who actually ran an acute psychiatric clinic without giving medications to people.
Wonderful.
Just an amazing man, a very religious Catholic. Kevin used to say that psychosis was losing the filter between yourself and God and the spiritual universe, so that people were just overwhelmed,
right,
and couldn't handle what was coming in from the other world.
Right.
Now, and again, I'm not even endorsing this stuff. I'm more like standing in amazement wondering what this universe is about. But,
right.
But you're talking about this filter being broken from head injury, and I think it gets broken from stress and emotional. I know it gets broken from emotional and psychological stress, and I'm starting to put together more thinking about this. But to take off on that a little bit, on this filter.
Well, you know, the filter, too. Let me point out, and I point this out to my patients routinely, that in the old days, and when we talk about the old days, we're only talking a few generations ago, when we go back to, like, our Native American cultures or whatever. Particularly like the Navajo Nation was very maternal. I mean, the women kind of rocked. And there was always that person, like the character in Avatar, the queen, the psychic, the oracle, the person who picked up on kind of data that other people could not interpret. And in the old days, those people used to be revered, you know? Now we look at it and say, oh, you know, so-and-so's a little crazy. She thinks that something big's going to happen today. Well, you know what? Something big may. I've definitely changed my tune on that. Like, if a patient comes into me and says, you know, doc, I had this really strange thing, like, you know, like there's going to be an accident around here today or something, you better take it easy. I listen to that. Who am I to say that that isn't true? And I do understand what the other psychiatrist was saying is, there is that fine balance between reading into it too much or reading too much from too many signals that I think would make you psychotic. But the people in the past who were able to do this well were actually the people revered in the village, again, because they ultimately helped with the survival of the village, right?
Well, I think I've never thought of that before, and I just think it's amazing and wonderful. I mean, it's hypervigilance in the service of the community is part of what you're talking about, hyper-spiritual vigilance in the service of the community.
Right.
And of course, there is an understanding growing that evolution favored our communities to have all sorts of different individuals with different capabilities.
Right.
It didn't favor sameness. Evolution has favored lots of folks with lots of different approaches and contributions and abilities and so on.
Right.
Well, I'm a little breathless.
Sorry about that. Go back in the pool. Then you're not doing enough laps.
Oh, God.
If you're breathless, get back and exercise.
Your spiritual lap, trying to keep up with your spiritual laps is a lot to do. Do you think you will ever write about this stuff?
Yeah, I think I have to at some point in time, mainly because I think there are other people going through you kind of fighting their brain in similar aspects. I want to tell them it's okay to kind of let this stuff happen. And that's what I'm doing right now with several of my young heroes who have come back, and they actually send me their writings via email. That's very healing. So I think they'll probably get a composite book of their thoughts as well. Again, there is that transformation of the brain, so you just need to go with that, and maybe we can help a whole different generation understand what some of the good aspects are of being a little bit abnormal. You know, what was that? Young Frankenstein, the abnormal brain. I tell him, says, well, your brain is abnormal, and let's see what we can do with it. You know, let's pick out what you can do, and let's make that happen for you and see how that goes. You know, it's very interesting because, you know, I think of the irony, and I just told you the irony, of a person whose brain injury rendered me speechless for, literally, I couldn't speak in sentences for, 6 to 8 weeks, and then very, you know, see spot run. But now I am going out and speaking for our heroes, trying to get them assistance to get the VA and the military and the civilian world to cooperate, and I just find that incredibly ironic, you know. What was taken away has been given back, but with a new sense of purpose.
Yeah. Did it? How did it change you? You were already working with head injured people, or just doing general rehab?
I was doing general rehab. Yes, I was not. I always liked the traumatic brain injury service because I am fascinated with the similarities and the differences. You know, just like when you said the people with the chronic brain injury, there are basic universal principles that happen to every brain given that injury, and then there's the individual response, which is different. So I always liked that. It made their rehab a lot more challenging than any other rehab, and I enjoyed that challenge because the rewards for breaking into that and giving somebody a new life and helping them come out of that, it's just very rewarding. But it is also frustrating. It's a slow process, but it happens. So anybody out there who has any of these questions, please contact your Brain Injury Association, contact Dr. Breggin's website, contact my website. There is help out there, and there are people who are understanding this now, although only about 8 to 10% of all medical docs actually treat or understand brain injury. So we've got a long way to go, Dr. Breggin, long way.
Oh, God, yes. Now, do you use medication sometimes in treating brain injury? You said not with pain. You try to avoid.
Correct.
You do avoid the pain injuries.
Correct.
And I think on occasion you will use medications with brain injury, what you
told
me.
Right, on occasion to kind of, particularly if a person's brain is dulled, but this is only after we do a complete evaluation and find out that their reaction time is slow and their memory time is slow. And if we have an incident where we're pretty sure there is an injury to that jumpstart area of our brain, our basal ganglia, that we say, then I do sometimes put people on small doses of medication, and I mean very small doses, homeopathic doses, and follow them very closely to see if you can help, you know, get that brain back going. Once you get it going and you get them into cognitive rehab where you actually are relearning what you lost, it's under the understanding that that is not a long-term medication. It's a jump start.
I'd love to get some head injury people studying what's happening to patients who've been on psych drugs for years and years, because I'm seeing such similar things to what you're talking about, head injury, except in some ways more bleak, because I think that having chemicals injure your brain for years and years and years is in some ways more confusing and difficult for the person than the sudden traumatic injury.
There are instances I would definitely agree with you on that. Yeah.
The other thing that would be fun to look at, I mean, with this so much stuff, would be the relationship between post-traumatic stress disorder and brain injury, and even traumatic loss, like the sudden death of a child or a loved one.
Correct.
Wow, there's a lot here to think about.
There is. You'll have to just keep, as you've been for all these years, just keep exploring.
Yeah, I want to do some more of the exploring with you, Krizanne Gordon.
Okay.
Very, very much so. Tell people again how to get in touch with you.
Sure. The name of my nonprofit that we're forming for our veterans is the Resurrecting Lives Foundation, and you can go and take a look at that at resurrectinglives.com. or .org, either one, but my actual email or address is just drgordon@resurrectinglives.org. And the idea is bringing the person back.
Thank you. The music means we are leaving. Krizanne Gordon, thank you so, so much for being on my show.
Thank you so much, and keep plugging there. Keep exercising too, Peter. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Breggin and his lifelong reform work on www.breggin.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.